T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
DeRozan again at the line where he's 9 to 10. He's got 32, and the toss, it is up and good. 125, 122. Bulls by 3. Paul in backcourt to Canota, slips and has to hoist up a 60-footer, and it's off the mark. Ball game over. Bulls win. Bulls win. Bulls win. And we are dancing, and I'm talking some serious dancing in San Francisco, California.
We're back live with more Rami McLaugh on 670 The Score. In Odyssey Station.
Chuck Swirsky with the call right here on 670 The Score. Man was dancing after another heart stopper, another win over the Warriors. And joining me now to talk about those Bulls and the NBA is the writer, editor, associate director of programming for SB Nation. It is Ricky O'Donnell joining me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Ricky, how are you this evening, my man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
What does it mean that the Bulls are clutch? I saw that they're the most clutch team in basketball, and that can either mean like they're really good in close games, or they need to be better earlier in games so that the games aren't so close later. What does it mean to you that the Bulls are clutch?
I think it's half the build of the roster and half just some luck that the team wasn't getting last year. We know DeMar DeRozan's always been really good in clutch situations, and this season, he's been incredible. He's got a 64% true shooting percentage, which is almost 10 points above league average in those situations. So he's just been money down the stretch of games. Of course, we remember his first season here 2 years ago when he had game-winning buzzer beaters in back-to-back games. You know, that clutch performance really reversed last year, where the Bulls were sort of a middling, lower-end team in the clutch. And because of that, they were a team that finished with a worse record than their net rating would indicate. The Bulls outscored their opponents, but still finished under 500 last year. This year, the Bulls have been getting crushed in basically all of their non-clutch minutes, but they've been able to hang around. It's a resilient roster, and they've been able to pull out a ton of games at the end of the game. So it's been basically 5 straight wins now. The Bulls have pulled out of thin air, and it sort of helped keep their season alive. They haven't been 500 since the second game of the season. And when they play the Clippers tomorrow, if they beat them, they're going to be 500 again at 32-32. So I think it's mostly a bit of luck for the Bulls in terms of their clutch performance this season. But, you know, part of it's having DeRozan on the team. Part of it's having Alex Caruso just seem to make so many incredible plays down the stretch. And it's certainly a resilient group. I think we've seen that much this year.
Ricky, my follow-up was going to be, does any of this translate to the pressure and the big stage of the play-in and maybe beyond that, playoff basketball? But it sounds like if you're saying luck, then maybe it doesn't translate unless they just keep getting lucky, right?
Yeah, it's been a trend that's been happening all year. Now, last year they were bad in clutch situations. This year that has totally reversed for whatever reason. You know, part of it might be because Zach LaVine, famously very anti-clutch, is out of the lineup this year, and perhaps because of that, the Bulls have been better down the stretch of games. But, you know, we'll see for the play-in. The play-in is a single elimination scenario. So the Bulls are likely to play the Atlanta Hawks in the 9-10 game. The loser of that game will be eliminated. The winner will play the loser of the 7-8 game. So it's going to be tough for the Bulls to make the playoffs. They're going to have to beat a pretty good team in that 7-8 game. And, of course, you know, they could still lose to Atlanta. I would favor the Bulls in that matchup, but anything could happen in a single game scenario. So yeah, I mean, we'll see if it translates. And, you know, for as much fun as the Bulls have been over the last couple of weeks, I think we all know sort of like the best case scenario for this season is getting slaughtered by the Celtics in the first round of the playoffs.
Right.
How good of a scenario that really is. I mean, you can make that determination yourself, but you know, credit the Bulls for their resilience for a season that could have gone off the rails a long time ago. They've been playing really hard. They've seen some nice development from a couple of young players on their roster. And, you know, they got a chance to get back to 500, which is pretty amazing considering they started 5-14.
Talking with Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation here. I'm Rami Makhlouf with you on a Friday night on 670 The Score. You talked about, you know, sort of what their ceiling is this season, and I agree with you. Can you wrap your head around what their ceiling or even their plans are long term? Because I saw a stat last time I was here on The Score just a couple of weeks ago that they haven't made a trade since 2021. They seem really locked into this roster that to me, Ricky, is just kind of middle of the road and permanently in the hunt for a play-in spot.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. All Arturis Karnišovas wants to do is be the eighth seed in the playoffs. I do not know why he aspires for that to be the case. I would guess his bosses are sort of pressuring him to try to make the playoffs and to not undergo a full-scale rebuild because, of course, the last time the Bulls did that, they hired Jim Boylan and everything went horribly. So this year, the Bulls have been drawing a ton of fans to the United Center. They've been playing some exciting games down the stretch. And it's unfortunate because it's an organization that does not aspire to win championships. They're not trying to build towards a championship. They're not trying to build towards even a contender in the Eastern Conference. They just want to make the playoffs. And I think that, you know, you look at the clutch luck they've had this year, as we've talked about. You look at, you know, the age of DeMar DeRozan and Nikola Vucevic. The Bulls better make the playoffs this year. And, you know, that's going to require winning two single elimination games. Because if they don't, I expect this team to be much worse next season. Even with the improvements we've seen this year from Kobe White, from Ayo Dosunmu, you know, there's still a lot of unresolved questions for this team. DeMar DeRozan's free agency being one of them. I'm sure they're going to give DeRozan a pretty big contract. He'll be back next year. And DeRozan's been phenomenal, but, you know, he's going to be 35 next season. He is slipping a little bit season after season, falling down the age curve. Vucevic has been pretty atrocious this year. One of the lowest true shooting percentages for any high volume shooter in the NBA. So, you know, we'll see how that is for him the next two seasons still under contract for the Bulls. So they got a lot of questions to answer. But in terms of like the Bulls, how do they, you know, ascend to be a top team in the Eastern Conference? My answer to that is they're not even trying to do that. They just want to be the seventh or eighth seed. They want to get a C+ on all of their tests and on all of their homework. And I'm sure some of us can relate to that, but it's not going to be that exciting, you know, for the fans long-term, in my opinion.
You mentioned Kobe White, who to me has been the greatest silver lining his emergence in this season. What is he though? Like, let's say they decide they want to win more than a play-in spot. Is he like a two or a three even in a big three for a team that is actually contending, or is he more role player when he hits his ceiling, which he might be right now?
I think it's still too early to say, but I think, you know, the way he's improved this year, still only 24 years old, he just looks like a great piece long term because he's really versatile as a guard. He's got pretty good size at 6'5". You could play him on the ball as a point guard, or you could play him off the ball as a shooting guard. And he's been really good in both roles. Right now this year, Kobe White leads the NBA in points off spot ups. So a lot of his buckets have been assisted by either DeMar or Vooch. They've come with Kobe, you know, running around the arc, relocating for threes, and finally living up to his billing as an elite shooter. This is the best shooting season of his career this year. And that's certainly been, you know, one big reason for the leap he's taken. He's hitting almost 40% of his threes, but he's also improved in like every other aspect of the game, in my opinion. Part of it is getting stronger. He's much more able to take on contact and play through contact this year than he ever was earlier in his career. When the Bulls beat the Kings in that amazing comeback a few nights ago, the go-ahead bucket was Kobe White lowering his shoulder, driving it into Trey Lyles' chest. That guy's about 6'10", 240 pounds. Kobe moved him back, created enough space for the go-ahead layup. Bulls win the game because of that. That was a play Kobe could not have made any other season besides for this year. He has his highest rim frequency rate. He's taking more shots at the rim than he ever has before this season. He has his highest free throw rate. He's getting to the foul line more than ever this year. And I think it's sort of the game slowing down for him mentally, his body getting stronger, him getting more experience now in his fifth year in the NBA, and then all of the work he's put in the offseason in terms of ball handling, in terms of strength and conditioning, all sort of coalescing for this big breakout season. It's very rare you see a player make as big of a leap as Kobe is doing right now in his fifth year. And I think it's a testament to how hard Kobe has worked on his body, on his skill set, over the last few summers. So he's been really good in terms of where he slots in the pecking order of a really good team. It's hard to say, but I think every team in the league could use a guy who could play on and off the ball, who could hit about 40% of his threes, who can run some pick and roll, who can get to the basket. These are all things Kobe's showing right now. And, you know, I would say the next step for him would be improving defensively, because still to this point, while he's made a big leap offensively, his defensive metrics are still pretty ugly. So I think, you know, still 24 years old, that's the next step for him, is getting better defensively.
Talking with Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I wanted to get into some NBA stuff outside of the Bulls with you, starting with just what the hell was that Anthony Edwards did last night? I've never seen anything like that, Ricky. He almost killed himself and seemed to jump from the free throw line to get a block at the buzzer to win the game for the Timberwolves. That was just ridiculous.
That was unreal. That was like some young Dwayne Wade stuff or Kobe Bryant stuff right there. I'm not going to mention MJ's hallowed name, but you know, it was very similar to what we've seen from some all-time great scoring guards, what Anthony Edwards did last night. First of all, he just totally dominated the game down the stretch as a scorer. I think he had 16 points in the fourth, just raining pull-up jumpers in every way possible. And then he makes the incredible block that you alluded to secure the win for the Timberwolves, sprinting full court, jumping so high that he bangs his head on the rim and then swats Pacers forward Aaron Nesmith, who would have had the game-tying layup. So that was crazy. The fact that it happened on the day the Timberwolves ruled out Karl Anthony Towns with meniscus surgery makes it even more incredible. Like, that was a tough day for the Timberwolves. They're having their best season in franchise history, basically, or at least since the KG era. You know, but they win that game and they're number one in the West now. And Anthony Edwards, you know, he better be that guy in the postseason. Still only 22 years old, former number one overall draft pick, but he's got a lot on his shoulders right now. And hey, at least for the moment, it looks like he's living up to it.
Yeah, I worked in Minneapolis for a minute, and so I'm familiar with their painful sports history and how every time it looks like things are great, you're just waiting for that other shoe to drop. So that was pretty big for them to just get that little boost after the cat news earlier in the day. But I was in Minnesota when Ant was drafted, and I loved him from day one. You wrote an article about him in high school, didn't you? Did you see like the how special this kid was back then?
Yeah, that's funny. So, you know, my beat at SB Nation has been covering the pipeline from high school to the NBA. I've been covering the NBA draft for over 10 years there. And one of the things I tried to do on that beat is sort of do profiles on players who are going to be potential number one overall picks a few years from now. And sometimes those profiles, I have not picked the right guys. Sometimes I have picked the right guys. And Anthony Edwards has been an example of that. And I just, you know, watch some AAU tape on him, talk to some people, you know, around him, and everyone just sort of said, like, this is going to be the next big thing. This guy's, you know, a future number one overall pick. So I remember talking to him, you know, back when he was a high school senior in 2019. And my main takeaway from chatting with him back then, we just talked over the phone for probably 20 minutes. I thought he was so funny and so confident. Mm-hmm. That's what I remember from chatting with him. And now, of course, he's like starring in Netflix movies with Adam Sandler, and he's all over commercials. And he just seems like, you know, he has the potential to maybe be the face of the league one day after this current generation of, you know, LeBron, Steph, Kevin Durant all retire. So it was very cool to be able to talk to him, you know, just when his career was starting to take off. And I think everything we've seen from him since then, he's only lived up to the hype.
Is a two-part question for you as we approach the playoffs. Is the West as wide open as people think it is, and is the East as not wide open as people think it is?
Yeah, I think in the West it's the Nuggets and everyone else. like the Nuggets are the best team. They have the best player in the world, Nikola Jokic. No one else is really even close to him. I would say Giannis is the next best player, but I think there's a little bit of a gap between Giannis and Jokic for sure. And you saw it in the matchup yesterday between the Celtics and the Nuggets. That should be the NBA Finals right there if the Celtics can take care of business in the East. I believe the Nuggets are the best team in the West. And, you know, Boston, even with Porzingis this year, giving them a stretch five, giving them an elite rim protector, he had no answer for Jokic. I mean, that was such a mismatch. Jokic's center of gravity, his scoring prowess in the low post, the fact that he's the best passer in the world, too. There's no answer for Jokic out there in Boston or for many teams, really. And I think Denver's the best team in the West. So even though they haven't really hit the gas yet, in my opinion, they're pacing themselves. They're only one game out of the number one seed in the conference. And last year, you know, you saw what happened when they got home court advantage throughout the playoffs. A lot of people were doubting the Nuggets. They hadn't seen them, you know, they had never won a championship in franchise history. Jokic had come up short a couple times in the playoffs when Jamal Murray was hurt. But when that team's healthy, all the pieces fit so well. I think you saw it in that Celtics game last night, just how complimentary Jokic and Aaron Gordon are in the front court. Jamal Murray is incredible year after year in the playoffs. So I think they're the best team in the West. I'd probably put the Thunder as their biggest challenger in the West. They're very young, but I love what the Thunder have going for them. And then in the East, I mean, the Celtics are the best team. They should make the finals. They should probably win the finals based off their point differential, their net rating this year. I think they're going to have a lot of trouble in a matchup with the Nuggets, in part because Jason Tatum's been terrible in clutch situations all year. The Celtics take so many threes, which is a good strategy over the course of an 82-game season. But when you get in a best-of-seven series, if you have a couple cold shooting nights, that could be a wrap for you. So I still think, you know, the Celtics deserve to be the favorite. The Bucks are defending better under Doc Rivers. Like I said, I think Giannis is the best player in the East, second best player in the world. And he's been awesome this season. He's absolutely a top three MVP candidate, but Damian Lillard hasn't been quite as good as they expected. It's not a very deep team. So I would say Celtics in the East, Nuggets in the West, and I would favor the Nuggets in an NBA final series between those two teams.
Hey, Ricky, this last question, Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation with me for just a couple more minutes. This is more big picture and philosophical, and if you just want to say it's a stupid question and move on with your life, that's fine. But I feel like I'm a bigger NBA fan than I ever have been because of the product on the court, and I'm all for, like, some good off-the-court drama. If a guy asks for a trade or something, you know what I mean? Like, I'm here for it, and it adds a little spice to the game, but I feel like NBA talk is kind of broken these days. When you look at a lot of the prominent talking heads around the NBA, so much of it is, like, if you talk about the MVP vote, they want to give it to who's the best story instead of who's just the best, most valuable player. There's a lot of just random, crazy, reckless speculation, like Victor Wembanyama is going to ask out of San Antonio soon. Does this stuff, is it as broken as it feels like to me? And as a member of the NBA media, does it get under your skin that so much of this just seems to be pulled out of thin air for clicks?
You know, I feel like I just consume smart NBA media. And if people want to listen to, you know, some good basketball conversation, I would recommend the Dunker Spot podcast with Nikias Duncan, Steve Jones Jr. Those guys are really awesome. They do deep analytical looks at all the teams, all the players. There's a lot of good stuff on ESPN, too. I've always listened to The Low Post with Zach Lowe. His stuff is always really good. Now, of course, you know, I write for a free website where we monitor the clicks. So I know that the money is in the rumors and some of, you know, some speculation about where free agents could go, what trades could happen. So I'm aware of that. But I think that there's just so much basketball coverage out there right now that while, you know, some of the most prominent voices on the biggest platforms might be kind of doing some lowest common denominator level analysis or rumor mongering, there's a ton of good basketball talk out there if you're willing to look hard enough for it and find it. So I understand what you're saying about, you know, there was that tidbit on ESPN that maybe sort of Wembanyama might be putting pressure on San Antonio to win right away. Well, man, I never seen anyone like Wembanyama, and he's going to be ready to win next year. So the idea there, I thought, was, you know, Spurs, you better not try to tank for Cooper Flagg at the top of the 2025 draft. because Wembanyama is too good to sit through another losing season. I think they got to sort of accelerate their rebuild a little bit. That's the give and the take of potentially getting an all-time great player at the start of his career. You can't wait around forever and keep tanking to, you know, accumulate more high draft picks when those guys are really competitive and ready to win. I think he's going to be a great story to monitor over the next few years. And yeah, I do think there's a lot of good basketball analysis out there if you're willing to find it.
And you can find it at SB Nation, where my guest Ricky O'Donnell, writer, editor, associate director of programming, and covering the NBA and the Bulls for them over there. You can also follow him on Twitter at @SBN_Ricky, and my guest for the last few minutes here. Really appreciate the time and the insight, Ricky. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks.
And he joins me on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He has a point. He has a point, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody. Not of the reckless, like unsourced, unbased in reality. I don't know if I just made up a word. NBA talk out there, but when it comes to giving it attention, I'm guilty, and we're better off just ignoring them. I know. But when I see Skip Bayless say that there was nothing special about that Anthony Edwards block, I see that come across my timeline. I just have to tweet how stupid that is. And part of it is Skip Bayless makes a lot more money than I do for being that stupid. All right, I'm going to admit it. It cuts a little deep personally, being in the industry and trying to be better than that. And yet that's what gets paid. All right, I got that off my chest. How is that not special, what Anthony Edwards did last night? The man put his life on the line to get a game-winning block, smashed his head on the backboard, and almost broke his wrist falling to the court. And a guy gets paid millions of dollars to go on TV the next morning and say there was nothing special about it. And I'm supposed to just ignore that? We'll hit a quick break on the other side. The Cubs got some problems in spring training this year, but they're the good kind of problems. I'm Rami Makhlouf with you on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
So I'm sorry to report to my friends in Chicago the nightmare.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Continues.
Yeah, I think we've passed that point of the nervous energy, and we're into like the heart of spring training and kind of executing our plan. But at the start, for sure. But it made it fun, really. That's energizing. It kind of puts you on point and gets you locked in. And I enjoyed that part of it. And you face that kind of every day, even trying to do it right every day for the group. So it's still there, but you know, we're certainly in the meat of spring training, and getting the team ready is getting the team ready. That's what we're trying to do.
We're back. Live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That's Cubs manager Craig Counsell on the Mully and Haw Show. You can check that out at 670thescore.com or on your Odyssey app. Speaking of the Cubs, 670 The Score is giving you and a guest an exclusive opportunity to be in Texas for the Cubs season opener. Be listening for the cue to call on Mully and Haw, Bernstein and Holmes, Parkins and Spiegel every day next week for your chance to qualify for the Cubs season opener flyaway, which includes airfare, hotel, and two tickets to the game on March 28th. Once you qualify, you'll need to be listening to Parkins and Spiegel when they announce the winner at 5 p.m. Friday, March 15th. The winner will then have 30 minutes to call in and claim the grand prize. It's a Cubs season opener flyaway exclusively right here on your home for Cubs baseball, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And spring training underway right now. And this spring training feels different to me than the last few spring trainings have for the Chicago Cubs. Might have a couple minutes to get you in if you're a Cubs fan. Want to talk some Cubs at 312-644-6767. Shoot me a call or a text. But the last few years, I've kind of felt the way about the Cubs that I was just saying I feel about the Bulls, that I didn't really know where this thing was going, and I felt like they were spinning their wheels in sort of mediocrity. And it was a little frustrating that the Cubs, you know, the big market Cubs, the big brother in town when it comes to the baseball teams, were not spending the way that we had gotten used to and would like to see them spending. And they still didn't go out and spend a bunch of money this offseason, but I really, really like the acquisition of the guy that you just heard right there on Mully and Haw, Craig Counsell. If you're not familiar with me, I've worked a long time in Milwaukee for our sister station, 1250 AM The Fan, native Chicagoan. I'm not invading. I'm not a cheesehead working behind enemy lines. Lifelong Chicagoan, lifelong Cubs fan. But that dude, man, that guy, in my opinion, now watching him day in and day out, so there, take it with that grain of salt, maybe the best game day in-game manager in Major League Baseball today. And I think he legitimately adds wins. And even though they didn't spend a lot of money this offseason, the Cubs this year going into the season have the kind of problems you like your baseball team to have. Every team goes into spring training with questions. The Dodgers have questions. I don't know what they are. But the Dodgers, for all the money that they spend and all the guys that they sign and somehow still having a great farm system that's constantly feeding good players up to the big leagues, they got questions. Everybody goes into spring training with questions. But for the most part, when it comes to the Cubs, no matter which answer you give to the question, you feel pretty good about it. And a perfect example of it is, well, the two prospects, the two young stars that they have coming up through their system, Owen Casey and Matt Shaw, they were both sent to minor league camp today, but not before impressing. And the only problem with those guys is, it seems like at this point, now Craig Counsell did say they need some seasoning and some developing, but there's just no room for them at either corner outfield spot or at third base. So both were sent to the minor league camp today. It's not that they're not good enough. On a lot of teams, they maybe make the opening day big league roster. For teams that are okay with, you know, going through the growing pains at the big league level, who aren't really trying to win anything this year, Owen Casey and Matt Shaw might be up with the big leagues, if not on opening day, soon after. But the Cubs just don't have room for them. That's a good problem to have. The other good problem to have is this sort of triangle that they got or had before today at first base and center field. With the return of Cody Bellinger, the acquisition of Michael Bush, the prospect from the Dodgers, and Pete Crow Armstrong, who was sent to AAA today, you had three good options for those two positions. Not to mention, you have the DH that you can play with a little bit. That's a good thing. That when you're going, hey, where do we put this guy who can be productive and who can contribute to a winning baseball team? We have nowhere to put him. That's a good problem to have. And like I said, I've seen and heard a lot of Craig Counsell in my time working in Milwaukee and watching and covering and talking about that Brewers team that he managed. And that's as good a guy to have trying to answer those questions and solve those problems as anybody, because he is a master at it. And I remember year in and year out, and I would talk to Craig Counselor, I would talk to their general manager, David Stearns, and I would ask the question, or others would ask the question of them about, hey, you got this log jam in center field or at shortstop or whatever the case might be. And it was their sort of cliche company line was, these things tend to figure themselves out. And as cliche as it was, they were almost always right, in the sense that one guy would just outplay everybody else and take the spot, or you'd have injuries and you'd end up needing all two or three guys at that position. And it just seemed like Craig Counsell always knew which button to push and which string to pull and which guy needed to be out there at what time. And here he is, again, from that conversation he had with Mullion Haw a couple days ago, talking about that triangle, that Belly, Michael Bush, PCA triangle that they have at first base and center field.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important part of that whole like conversation is that whatever decision you make, you're not bound to it for 162 games, right?
Right.
And that's what's important about, that's where depth matters. So it's really like, let the players play, and whoever determines themselves as the guy that should be in there, plays, right? We're going to have to make a decision like early on. Yeah, if you're talking about three guys for two positions, we're going to have to make a decision who's going to play first, no question about it. But it doesn't bind us to that the whole season. And, you know, when you're talking about young players that don't have the track record that Cody Bellinger has, yeah, you're going to have to earn it, right? And so between Michael and Pete, there's definitely a decision to make there. I mean, I think we're committed to giving Michael at bats at first base. I know that. And that's going to happen. So, but after that, then there's he's going to have to earn kind of that next phase of that, right? And the good thing with this is that we have another place to go if it doesn't work out, right? And that's where the team, I think, I talk about a floor, and it may not be exciting, but it's important. And that's where the team has established itself.
I could listen to that guy talk about baseball and that decision-making process all day, and he's right. It's nothing that you're locked into. Like Pete Crow Armstrong, in case you haven't heard, he was sent down to AAA today. That does not mean that Pete Crow Armstrong is not going to be up and contributing to this club at some point. Right now, they're giving, it seems, Christopher Morel all the time at third base to sort of figure out his defense, because they want the bat in the lineup. Where before, some of the plan was have him take some reps over at first base. If they plug in a third baseman somehow, some way, here sometime soon, you figure he's back in the mix for that first base spot, along with Belly and along with Michael Bush. And all three of those guys can be involved in the DH rotation on a day-to-day basis. And having all those moving pieces and all that versatility is exactly the type of arsenal and tool set that you want to give to a Craig Counsell, because he knows how to use it. And I'm really looking forward to watching how he uses it this season. I think it's going to be a fun season, man. And these are good problems to have for the Cubs and for Cubs fans, if you're listening here on 670 The Score or wherever you might take your Cubs content in. And again, don't forget, check out all the shows this weekend for your opportunity to be in the Cubs, to be in Texas for the Cubs season opener. And they will announce the winner on Friday on the Mully and Haw Show at 5 p.m. This Friday, March 15th. So go ahead and get in on that. We'll hit a quick break on the other side. Back to some Bears talk and what Brian Baldinger thinks of Caleb Williams and a couple of the other prospects that are coming up in this NFL draft. I'm Robbie Maklof with you, taking you into the weekend on a Friday night right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back live with more Robbie Maklof on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
And I'm live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. I'm with you until 9 o'clock. My buddy Bart Winkler takes over at 10 o'clock right here on CBS Sports Radio, from right here, from this very studio that I'm sitting in. in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I gave you a peek behind the curtain there. I hadn't mentioned that I'm in Milwaukee till now. But again, I am a Chicagoan through and through. Don't turn off your radio or your Odyssey app. Like, oh, he's one of us. No, I am. I'm one of you. Don't worry about it. We're good. Earlier today, a guy who I know you love on the Clock show, Mark Grody, had a chance to talk with Brian Baldinger, who's a guy I love. I could listen to Baldy and Baldy's breakdowns, well, breakdown football all day. It's great, and every time he's on the Score and when he joins Grody, it's amazing. And those two guys talked at the Combine and got all their notes together and then got together tonight on the Clock show right here on 670 The Score. And, of course, they talked about Caleb Williams. And a lot of the talk about Caleb Williams was the way that he handled himself at the Combine, deciding to sit out some things that guys would normally do. Here's what Baldy thought about the way that Caleb Williams handled himself at the NFL Scouting Combine.
I'm a fan of Caleb. I've known him since he was in high school in Maryland. And so I've been around him, and I know what kind of I feel like I know what kind of kid he is. I know how smart he is. If nothing against him not throwing, you like Michael Penix through, and you know, other guy, you know, Bo Nix and some guys threw out there. It's becoming less and less of an event for some guys at the very top of the draft. And so I think they want to have a more controlled environment, to be honest with you, rather than throwing to guys they don't know and guys running routes they don't know. Like, I think maybe if he's throwing out there at USC and next month and he's in California, he's throwing to his guys, like it might look better for anybody that he's trying to impress, although I don't think he's really trying to do that. I think he's got 3 years of good tape out there. I think he handled things fine. He did a lot of social media stuff. He did some stuff for the NFL Network. He had a smile on his face. He was there the whole time cheering the guys on. I think he showed up and did, the personal type stuff. Anybody that sits in a room with Caleb Williams is going to be impressed by how much football knowledge he possesses.
Yeah, I said earlier in the show, I don't care about him not throwing at the combine. I don't care about, I don't know, but apparently him painting his fingernails bothered some people, or none of this stuff bothers me. And we were talking with, Carmen Vitale, who covers the NFC North for Fox Sports. And she said the same thing and brought up what I thought was a good point, which is Caleb Williams sort of ushers in this new generation of athlete who comes from college having been paid, and not under the table, but having been paid with NILs since they got to college. And some of them, even before that, their entire existence at least a collegiate level has been basically of a professional athlete. And man, the game is changing. Whether you like it or not, the game is changing. And Caleb Williams, I think, sort of is one of the first in that wave of the game changing in terms of how these guys handle themselves as a business and not just as players. As far as players, though, here's what Brian Baldinger saw from Caleb Williams on tape.
Well, from the day he stepped on the field in the Texas OU Oklahoma, Red River Shootout in the biggest college football game in the Big 12 every year. I mean, he's been a dominant player. He was at Oklahoma, turned their season around the moment he stepped on the field. He went out with Lincoln Riley to USC. And, look, there were games even last year. If they didn't score 40, they had no chance of winning the game. They scored 40 in some games, and couldn't beat Washington when they put up 45. That was very reminiscent of what it was like when Patrick Mahomes was at Texas Tech. And I'm not comparing him to to Patrick Mahomes, although a lot of people want to do that. But he had to play a wide-open game because defensively they were terrible. And he knew that if they didn't get 40 on the board, they weren't going to win a game. So that's kind of like the mindset I think he had. But he's got all – like, he sees the field really, really well. He's got great ability to extend plays. He's very elusive. I think he's stick accurate with his throws, layered throws, deep ball. All the bubble screens and all the perimeter stuff that you do from that position now in college football. The offense was pretty simple, to be honest with you. The offense in college football almost has to be simplified now just because of the amount of transfers that are coming in to every program every year now. You got to make it so that the guys can play immediate and play fast. And so, the offense is much, much simpler than what he'll see at the NFL. But I think he can handle anything that he gets thrown at and any playbook that he gets thrown at.
Yeah, man, all of what he said about all the tools that Caleb Williams has there is what I've heard from just about everybody. You have your aberrations and guys who will tell you that, you know, he's not that good, or Merrill Hodge and a couple of other guys. And I'm not saying they're wrong. Nobody really knows who's right and who's wrong to this point. But the overwhelming sentiment is Caleb Williams has every tool that it takes to succeed at the NFL level. But, and I'm going to circle back around to this, not before I say, though, I've moved on and I'm ready for Caleb Williams. But what he said there at the beginning about Caleb Williams and that USC offense needing to score 40 points to win football games, that's the college equivalent of when Justin Fields had to score 30 points to win NFL football games in year two as the quarterback of the Bears, and in Ryan Poles' first year as a general manager of the Bears. And we tore down the entire defense, had no intentions of winning football games, put no pieces around Justin Fields. And I'm telling you, if he does that to Caleb Williams, which I don't think he will, because they have the resources in salary cap space and in draft picks, they have the resources to surround him with some players. But if you do that with Caleb Williams, nobody is franchise proof. And the Bears have shown time and time again that they are very adept at breaking quarterbacks. And I know Ryan Poles wasn't part of that, and he deserves a benefit of the doubt and a clean slate or whatever the case might be. He didn't draft or break Mitch Trubisky or Jay Cutler or anybody else. But I'm scarred as a Bears fan. And I do worry about, are we doing the same thing over again of drafting a quarterback and not putting him in the best position to succeed? As good as Caleb Williams can be. Patrick Mahomes, I've said this before, would not be Patrick Mahomes if the Bears took him. If you put Patrick Mahomes, if you turned him over to John Fox and whoever was the offensive coordinator that year, I already Dowell forgot. Loggins. Dowell Loggins? That was a real person, Alex?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Dowell Loggins. Loggins? I forgot. Can we not mention his name again? Because I had blocked it out successfully. His entire tenure as the offensive coordinator of the Chicago Bears. Are you really think Patrick Mahomes would be Patrick Mahomes if he had John Fox and Dowell Loggins followed by Matt Nagy and the trash that they surrounded Mitch Trubisky with in terms of talent? No. You need to put a quarterback in position to progress and develop and succeed. Caleb Williams or anybody else. That is my closing statement here on 670 The Score on a Friday night. I want to thank Carmen Vitale from Fox Sports covering the NFC North for joining me. Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation covers the Bulls and the NBA. Check out their work. Go back and check out those interviews at 670thescore.com, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, thanks to Alex Kuhn for lining up those interviews, producing this show, and a fine job on the ones and twos this evening. I'm Rami Makhlouf. Don't forget to check out my guy Bart Winkler coming up at 10 o'clock right here on CBS Sports Radio. Coming up right after this, it's BetMGM Tonight right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way.
Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.